Love It or Leave It is brought to you by Quince. Cold mornings, holiday plans. This is where I need my wardrobe to just work. That's why I'm all about Quince. They make it easy to look sharp, feel good, and find gifts that last. From Mongolian cashmere sweaters to Italian wool coats, Quince clothes are crafted from premium materials and built to hold up without the luxury markup. They have the essentials every guy needs. You get a Mongolian cashmere sweater for $50, Italian wool coats that look and feel designer, denim and chinos that fit just right. I was doing some last-minute Cyber Monday shopping, and I clicked on over to Quince. They had a great Mongolian like hoodie.
I literally just did that.
Really?
Like an hour ago, I was on the Quince website doing Christmas shopping.
Yeah, it's great. It's great.
They have a whole like holidays gift section.
And they have really good stuff. Each piece is made from premium materials by trusted factories that meet rigorous standards for craftsmanship and ethical production. They cut out the middleman and traditional markups. So Quince delivers the same quality as luxury brands at a fraction of the price. It's everything you actually want to wear, built to hold up season after season. Get your wardrobe sorted and your gift list handled with Quince. Don't wait. Go to quince.com/loveit for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/loveit. Free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/loveit. What's up, Los Angeles? Welcome to Love It or Leave It, live at Dynasty Typewriter. We got a great show for you tonight. This is our last show of the year. We're going out strong. Cameron Crowe is here. And I'm almost famous. Ting Notaro is back. And we're going to close out 2025 with what we loved, what we'll leave, and what we learned, and what we simply refuse to accept as we head into the undiscovered future. There's so much to not accept. I made it weird. But first, let's get into it. What a week. After 60 Minutes aired an interview with his ally turned nemesis, Marjorie Taylor Greene, President Trump attacked the show and its corporate parent, writing, "My real problem is that the new ownership of 60 Minutes, Paramount, would allow a show like this to air. They are no better than the old ownership who just paid me millions of dollars for fake reporting about your favorite president, me." Since they bought it, and 60 Minutes has actually gotten worse. Added Trump, and bring back Andy Rooney. That's a good idea. It's not. If it's possible. This is the thanks Paramount gets for paying Trump millions of dollars to settle a ridiculous lawsuit, installing Barry Weiss as editor-in-chief of CBS News, and greenlighting Rush Hour 4 at Trump's personal request. And to be clear, that last one is fine. I think Biden or Kamala would have also demanded a new Rush Hour movie. It's just a natural thing for the president to do, given all that's going on. Trump's tantrum is poor timing for Paramount, which hopes he'll put his thumb on the scale in their quest to acquire Warner Brothers. And time is of the essence. Trump's thumbs could fall clean off at any moment. As you know, last Friday, Netflix announced plans to buy Warner Brothers Discovery for $83 billion. To put that number in perspective, it's $83 billion. If finalized, Netflix would acquire the studio and streaming business while the cable unit would be spun off into a separate company. And for some reason, Netflix CEO Ted Sarandos demanded a fur coat made of the WB's finest animaniacs. Netflix has already been hit with a class action lawsuit seeking to block the deal, and a group of anonymous top filmmakers wrote a letter to Congress warning that the merger would be a disaster for Hollywood. And I don't know how many more disasters Hollywood can take. We still haven't recovered from the strikes, the fires, the ArcLight closing, and all the movie stars getting their eyes done at once. Showing up fucking different, looking younger and surprised all at once. What the fuck? Was there a deal? Where'd all the lower blefs go? Just some horrible pile of lower blefs sitting in Beverly Hills somewhere. The anonymous filmmaker said in that open letter that they left the note unsigned, not out of cowardice, but out of fear of retaliation, which signals that perhaps not a lot of prominent writers were part of the letter. It's impossible to know who the filmmakers are, though one of them did add, P.S., I wouldn't fuck Paul Dano with somebody else's feet. And who would say that? Could be anybody. Speaking of not accepting defeat, Paramount... Yes! You're welcome. Fucking yes. Speaking of defeat, Paramount launched a hostile takeover bid to buy Warner Brothers Discovery, going straight to shareholders with an all-cash $30 per share offer. Pretty exciting stuff. Will Warner Brothers be sucked up into a giant monopoly in which a half dozen people decide what a third of us watch every night after dinner? Or will it be sucked up into a different giant monopoly? I'm on the edge of my seat in a car that is going into the ocean. And with the future of Hollywood at stake, these titans of industry are engaged in one of the biggest and most consequential ass-kissing contests in human history. But which globe-bestriding magnate will attend to the task with greater passion? Which billionaire will get their mouths deeper, use their lips more assertively upon the presidential crack? Who shall play the most beautiful version of Hole to the Chief? David Ellison, the head of Paramount and son of billionaire Larry Ellison, made a recent visit to Washington and promised Trump officials that if he bought Warner Brothers, he would overhaul CNN's programming. Ellison allegedly even promised Trump that one of the N's in CNN can stand for any N-word he wants. On Wednesday, Trump confirmed that he likes where Ellison's head is at.
I just think that the people that have run CNN, I don't think they should be entrusted with running CNN any longer. So I think any deal should be guaranteed and certain that CNN is part of it or sold separately.
This is Anderson Cooper. And he is waiting for someone to adopt him before he is put down. And he's one of so many anchors in need of a home. Meanwhile, the financial backers of Paramount's bid include three Middle Eastern sovereign wealth funds and the private equity firm led by none other than Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner. It's unnerving how quietly Jared moves through the world these days. He disappears from view, you start to forget about him, and then all of a sudden he comes crawling out of the ceiling at Warner Brothers pitching a movie about a super tall pale guy everybody likes. With its new investors, Paramount is promising to create all kinds of exciting new films as part of a merger with HBO, like Harry Potter and the now explicitly Jewish bank goblins. Harry Potter and the journalist who had it coming. Barbie 2, Ken was right the whole time. And a brand new cable channel, Riyadh Comedy Central. Bloomberg reported over the weekend that Sarandos went to the White House last month to meet with Trump, and the two struck up quite a rapport. They bonded over their shared interest in Ted Sarandos complimenting Trump for several hours in a row. When Trump was asked about the deal on Sunday, he told reporters, well, that's got to go through a process and we'll see what happens. Trump then tried to imitate the Netflix sound.
Bing bong.
But it's not just Hollywood that's terrified about its economic future. In response to growing anger about the cost of, like, bing bong, cost of living, Trump continues to claim it's all a big scam from the Democrats.
They say, oh, he doesn't realize prices are high. Prices are coming down very substantially. But they have a new word. You know, they always have a hoax. The new word is affordability.
He's never sounded more like a cartoon rich guy. They're making up new words, affordability, BOGO, coupon. No one knows what they mean. Trump, of course, hewed closely to the prepared remarks, relentlessly driving his message about how much he is focused on the economy.
I didn't say shit, all you did. Remember I said that to the senators they came in? The Democrats, we had a meeting. And I say, why is it we only take people from shithole countries, right? Why can't we have some people from Norway, Sweden, just a few? Let us have a few.
Yeah, man, we asked. It's a pass. They have social democracy and universal health care. Norway and Sweden don't want their children to die because of gun violence. They want their children to die the Scandinavian way from a vitamin D deficiency or at the hands of an ice witch. And then Trump played the hits because, baby, that's what the people came to see.
Transgender for every member in your family. If they're not feeling well that night, let's just change their sex.
And when he is actually forced to discuss the economy, Trump is telling the American people to trust him and not their own experience.
I wonder what grade you would give
A plus.
Economy. A plus.
Yeah, A plus, 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 plus.
That ought to cheer up your kids when they're unwrapping their Christmas present, one loose cigarette. Also this week, Trump pledged a $12 billion aid package to help American farmers hurt by Trump's trade wars. A little bit of a sorry you lost your housewarming gift. But if I've learned anything from trash television, farmer doesn't want a government check. Farmer wants a wife. Besides, $12 billion is a drop in the bucket when American farms are predicted to lose $34 to $44 billion annually because of Trump's tariffs and trade policies. Said the president of the American Soybean Association on CNN, "Does anybody need a trillion beans?" No, here's his actual response.
In terms of the long term, does this fix things?
Well, this is a Band-Aid on an open wound.
Band-Aid on an open wound? Great idea, said Senate Republicans, proposing Band-Aids for open wounds as a replacement for expiring Obamacare subsidies. Yes, Republicans are resigned to allowing the subsidies to expire at the end of the month. Here's Kansas Senator Roger Marshall on Tuesday.
Rita, I can share with you that I've had multiple bipartisan conversations, and we're not going to be able to get a solution done in the next several weeks. Those parties are too far apart on this critical issue.
The parties are too far apart? What is this, me not leaving the house on New Year's Eve? Then Senate Majority Leader John Thune announced a vote on a Republican alternative to the current Democratic plan to renew the subsidies for 3 years, setting up dueling votes on Thursday. And sadly, America is the Ned Beatty in this scenario. Rather than extend the subsidies, the Republican alternative sets up savings accounts into which the government would pay about $1,000 per year for eligible Americans. Of course, $1,000 would not help in an actual medical emergency like a car accident or cancer diagnosis or eating ice cream while Jewish. Meanwhile, Mike Johnson told the press that House Republicans will bring a vote next week on their package of healthcare proposals that also does not extend Obamacare subsidies.
We have some low-hanging fruit. We have some things that every Republican agrees to. Democrats won't. Remember, they don't actually want to fix this problem.
You know healthcare ideas every Republican can agree to, like wooden spoons to bite down on. Lobotomies for mouthy Kennedys. Prayer. A free app for tracking nocturnal erections. Chromosomal testing for that tall woman you saw at the bank. And Q-tips, because you know these guys are just getting in there, you know? These freaks. On Wednesday, a group of more vulnerable House Republicans led by Pennsylvania Congressman Brian Fitzpatrick rebelled against the leadership, attempting to force a vote on a bill to extend the expiring subsidies. And wouldn't you know it, Marjorie Taylor Greene, among the Republicans who signed the discharge petition. What happened to her? Did Clarence the Angel show her what the world would look like if she were never born and it was fucking awesome? On Thursday, the Democratic bill to extend Obamacare failed, virtually guaranteeing that Americans who relied on these subsidies will see their premiums double, or more likely not see it since their eyeballs fell out. And so we end the year as we began it, still somehow working through our pandemic tuna. Just me? Okay. The truth is, this was always going to be a rough year. But for my part, I am ending 2025 more hopeful than when it began. And I'm not even in therapy right now. Probably means I never even needed it to begin with. Trump came in like a wrecking ball in January, purging the federal government, bullying colleges and law firms, turning the government into a piggy bank for his friends and family, destroying USAID, knocking down the East Wing, unleashing a radicalized ICE into our communities, releasing the last living Melania Trump into the wild. But underneath all the bluster, the goons behind this bliss understood that time was not on their side. That's because every presidency is overtaken by events. It's because the lack of popular support for any of this shit, the total lack of a mandate, means rising opposition anywhere outside of Trump's control. And it's because you can put a hat that says 2028 on a lame duck, but that bitch still can't swim. And that's what's happened. Leaks and resignations and temporary restraining orders and lawsuits, endless coverage of Trump's escapades to rename bodies of water, murder people in boats, build fancy ballrooms, all while failing to address the rising cost of living and economic uncertainty that made his reelection possible. A new AP poll released just today finds Trump's economic approval has dipped to 31%, the lowest rating he's received on the economy across either his first or second term. But just wait till Rush Hour 4 comes out. Gonna see a big Rush Hour 4 bump. And it is a virtuous circle. Trump's rising unpopularity weakens him while inspiring defiance all around him, which only weakens him further. We've seen that in Congress, on the Epstein files, and on a bipartisan discharge petition to extend Obamacare subsidies, and in the collapse of several of his political prosecutions, and in Indiana, where under withering pressure from Trump and his allies, Republicans in that state just voted down a plan to gerrymander their congressional maps. And so, yes, in the absence of genuine oversight from Republicans in Congress and given a pliant Supreme Court, Trump can abuse the pardon power, help his sons make billions, decimate the government, bully corporations, turn the antitrust process into a beauty contest, including a swimsuit competition between David Ellison and Ted Sarandos. He is doing a lot of damage. He's threatening to do a lot more. But democracy is stronger than it looks. Would-be authoritarians are weaker than they look. And jelly donuts always look better than they taste. Something for all of us to remember as Hanukkah rolls around. Democracy contemplates error and weakness. It is a distributed and redundant system without a single point of failure. So Trump can hack at it and hack at it and hack at it, install a flunky prosecutor here, a vaccine denier there, grab some stock in Intel here, threaten a late night host there, and it will weaken the system and corrupt its components. But a lot of those circuits still find a way to close, which is another way of saying democracy is still causing Trump to short circuit every single day. That may not always be true, but right now it is. We can't predict what next year will bring other than a star-studded premiere at Rush Hour 4. But we know what we have to do. We got to organize, protest, win the midterms, and try to be the right amount of nice to Marjorie Taylor Greene because she is our next president. All right, coming up next, Kennedy, ready my trench coat and boombox? Cameron Crowe is here.
Hey, don't go anywhere. There's more of Love It or Leave It coming up.
Love It or Leave It brought to you by Helix. How are you preparing for the colder season? Are you spending more time indoors? I bet you are. Well, you should stay comfortable with your Helix mattress. It's a perfect time to invest in a new mattress. Sleep is even more important during sick season, peak cold, and flu time. The other day, I had a few hours in the afternoon on a Sunday, and I had dinner plans, and I was alone in the home. And I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to lie in this bed. I'm going to watch YouTubes.
That's a nice
so comfortable on my Helix mattress. I watched a bunch of YouTubes. I watched a cooking video. I watched a science video. I watched something about jet engines. That's what the algorithm wants.
Then some Nazi stuff. Yeah, all of a sudden, the algorithm took me to the Nazi.
Like, well, you think you might want some Nazi stuff. Take the Helix Sleep Quiz. It'll match you with the perfect mattress based on your personal preferences, making it easy to find a mattress that fits your sleep needs. Helix delivers your mattress right to your door with free shipping in the U.S. Rest easy with seamless returns and exchanges. The Happy with Helix Guarantee offers a risk-free, customer-first experience designed to ensure you're completely satisfied with your new mattress. They even offer a 120-night sleep trial and limited lifetime warranty. So go to helixsleep.com/loveit for 25% off site-wide. That's helixsleep.com/loveit for 25% off site-wide. Make sure you enter our show name in the post-purchase survey so they know we sent you. helixsleep.com/loveit.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money. But nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
And we're back! My first guest, a legendary writer and director known for his incredible needle drops. Don't worry, we found the perfect one for his walk-on. Please welcome to the stage the amazing Cameron Crowe.
Good to see you. Thank you for being here.
You're on fire.
Yeah, I'm on fire. How are you? So nice to meet you. I'm so excited to talk to you.
You
too. I've been really enjoying the book. The Uncool. So are you the Uncool?
Yes, of course.
That comes across in the text. So there's such a warmth radiating off of you. I felt it the second I was backstage, because I'll tell you something when I was reading the book, and I felt the same way when I watched Almost Famous, which is I get to the end of this book and you are extremely reticent to explain why any of these fucking people talk to you. You won't do it. There's one point where you kind of hint at with David Bowie, mm-hmm. why David Bowie would have bothered talking to you.
Yeah.
But it really is very passive that you would just listen, which is, I think, something a good interviewer does, not my practice, but different skills, different styles. But I just want to understand, like, all these people didn't accidentally talk to you. What is it?
Part of it was listening. Because I was terrified the first time I did an interview with somebody who's kind of like of great status. I was terrified because it was Kris Kristofferson, and he heard my question, which is about being lonely on the road, and he just stopped. And I thought, oh no, I have to fill the silence, or he hates the question. I'm going to get thrown out. But he started to talk, and I realized, like, by the end of the conversation that, like, I made him really happy by not talking. So that made it a great conversation for him. So it kind of like rolled into the way I like to do interviews, which is to listen and be interested, you know?
Yeah.
Like you. Like you're fascinated with what somebody's going to say. And that makes them want to talk.
Yeah, I don't think that's it. So I'm glad you brought up Kris Kristofferson, because Kris Kristofferson was on my mind because I had either never known or forgotten that he was a Rhodes Scholar.
Yeah.
That Kris Kristofferson was a Rhodes, because I think of it as this sort of this gruff, kind of plain spoken, terse guy.
Salty.
Salty. And I certainly would not have put him in my mind as some like intellectual, smart guy, but I just wouldn't have sorted him into Rhodes Scholar.
Yeah.
And, you know, you were, how old were you when you talked to Kris Kristofferson?
15.
15.
Yeah. And he started referencing books and Kurt Vonnegut and The Last Picture Show, film that was, you know, in great regard then. And he just included me in such a way that it made me feel like a peer.
Yeah, because so, he saw something in you, an intelligence in you.
I think he promised his fiance, Rita Coolidge, that he was going to do an interview with the kid with an orange bag. And so he was like, going to make good on that.
But you're pushing. See, this is what you do throughout the whole fucking book, which is like, oh, shucks. People keep telling me the craziest shit they've ever said to any reporter ever over and over and over and over. Like at least a dozen times in the book, these like people that never talk to anybody, they talk to you. And I feel like I can't tell if you don't, why? There's something special about you. You're a special, talented person. You've had wild success in every single thing you've ever done. That's not an accident. So what, why?
I don't think I come across as somebody who's there to judge. I just kind of want to be on receive and let people sit next to me with whatever article or whatever I'm doing, you know, and this is what it felt like. This is what it felt like to be with Led Zeppelin. This is what it felt like to spend 18 months with David Bowie. Like I genuinely had an agenda no further than including people like me into the fan experience, because I love the fan experience. And sometimes, you know, I got criticized for it among, you know, staff members at Rolling Stone and stuff like that. It's like, you just write about the people you like. Well, why not? You know?
Right.
Why not?
There is this tension where I think it was the Led Zeppelin the head of Rolling Stone, Jan Wenner.
Yeah.
It's published. It's a huge hit. And then he kind of undercuts you about it, right? He's like, eh.
Right? Yeah, I thought I was going to get called into to see like the editor and publisher of Rolling Stone and thanked for getting Led Zeppelin, who hated Rolling Stone, to be on the cover and like participate in this huge article. But really, he was calling me in to say, as a little bit of this is in Almost Famous. He was calling me in to say, like, did you write about what you wanted to write about, or did you write about what they wanted you to write about? And I was sitting there like, there's no thank you coming. He was really saying, like, you know, are you going to grow up? Are you going to write something that's like truly going to last? Well, you got to dig a little deeper for that. And he was having a terrible day because his mentor had died that day. So he had no reason really to sit down and talk to me except to try and say, you know, there's a path you can take. You can be a fan, or you can be a fan who writes about something that's coming from a deeper place, which I've tried to do ever since.
Is that so? You're working on a Joni Mitchell movie right now.
Yeah.
And I was actually, which people are excited about.
I'm excited about it.
And what I was thinking about is like, what makes for a great biopic? Is a great biopic one from the fan perspective, or is a great biopic one from the Wenner perspective?
I think you can do both. I think you can do both. And the way you do it is to never forget that there are going to be people who love Joni Mitchell, for example, and want to get that feeling that you get from loving Joni or loving her work, you know? So, like, don't leave the fans behind for a take that's going to not make sense to you as a longtime fan, but also bring in people that don't know who she is and don't whitewash the story. And she's like the queen of not whitewashing. So this is a good subject to expand the biopic genre with.
I'm excited about that. Yeah, no, I was thinking about Joni Mitchell and you talking about how you wanted to feel like a Joni Mitchell song or a Joni Mitchell album. And I was thinking about Both Sides Now as like, as close to a biopic in a song,
yeah.
You know, just as a structure, like this sort of idea of like the ways you can look back on your life. And I was very excited about what you were going to do with it.
Cool. Well, she wrote that song when she was 22.
It's wild.
And her husband at the time heard it and said, that's false. That, how do you know what your life is going to be like if you're 22? You can't talk about love. You can't talk about life. And what happened, I think, was at 22, she wrote about a life in such a way, in such a robust way, that now at 80, she steps in to singing that song and it has all the resonance that you could have dreamed of as a 22-year-old. She's an amazing story. And you don't really have to stay in the biopic genre to tell it. What biopics have you liked?
I was thinking about that. And it's the ones that you don't think of as biopics often. You know?
So true.
You don't think of Goodfellas as a biopic.
No. but I will now.
But you know, but it's based on a true story.
To me,
it's the movies that the story matters even if the person didn't matter, because you're in on what the story, yeah. Like Black Klansman was like that to me.
Loved Black Klansman.
Yeah. And then
great.
Yeah, I think the ones that are reverent, a little too reverent of their subject.
Yeah.
They make an impression. You will walk out of the theater and they will be moving and touching, but they have this strange way of disappearing. They matter a great
deal when
Oscars are being doled out, and then you never fucking talk about them again. Like, you know, like they're except, like Malcolm X is, I think, is an exception, but there are others that like just come and go. Like, I don't know, like people hitting play on Lincoln, people hitting play on, you know, Ali or you know, there are movies that have this moment, but then they're gone.
It's true. You know, I think a lot of biopics just ignore the fact that like, there's humor in life. People did tell jokes in the 60s and 70s. There was funny stuff that happened. And a friend of mine also said, like, I like to see a movie where the subject in that genre, like where the person has fun. Like they're not just like aching with a furrowed brow, like where is this song gonna come from? Oh my God, it's coming to me. It's like, just have fucking fun.
Can
like the Beatles.
I am so glad you said that. And I want to tell you something. This was on my mind, and I wasn't sure if I was going to tell you this. Which is, I'm going to make a question,
okay.
Request. My least favorite thing in any biopic about any artist is it's like, fucking Ringo's walking down the street and he sees a yellow car and a submarine. He goes, I've got it. You know what I mean? You know, and like, it's just like, in a sense, it's. like a day in our lives. And then they fucking write it down. It makes me want to die every time.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't do that. You're not going to do that,
no,
right?
No, no, no. No, we're not going to do that. Oh, nor are we going to have the record executive scene where it's like, that song is 8 minutes. It'll never be a hit. We can never put it out at 8 minutes. Plus, it's operatic. No, Queen, you can't put that song out. Cut to people around the world.
Yes.
Loving that song.
Yes, now I'm so in. I knew Cameron Crowe got it. All right. It's so interesting sitting across from you because I was really like, what? Why is fucking the Allman Brothers talking to you so much? You know, some pipsqueak kid from San Diego. Like, who gives a shit about you? But there's something very warm about you. It's interesting.
Thanks.
You're like almost like afraid to talk about it in the book. Like it's something like you don't want to write about yourself.
Well, I didn't want to be, you know, the person that's so important to themselves that they are the hero of every scene and everything. I just wanted it to be about the people that I got to meet who were good to me, who opened doors and, you know, said, come and stand here and watch the Allman Brothers do Whipping Post. Like, stand on stage 6 feet away from Greg. Come on, stand there. You're going to get off. Like, the roadies would help me out and stuff. Yeah. Because I loved the music. And particularly, like, coming up at that time, there weren't a lot of outlets to write about music at any length, really. And when there was, it was kind of like somebody that was interrogating the musician. Like, why are you so important? Why do I have to write about you? And I'm like, Deep Purple, I want to know everything about you, you know? And they'd be so happy to talk to a real fan. But I definitely asked hard questions. And when it's a real conversation, you'll get your hard questions answered in a great way.
Do you think when you gave, I didn't realize that the story in Almost Famous about the tapes was based on what really happened, which is you get called up to the hotel room of Greg Allman, and he demands the tapes back, and I'm reading. It's like a horror movie where don't run up the stairs, run out the front door, and it's like what?
Scared the shit out of me. But, I mean, we had done an amazing interview 3 hours earlier, and then the phone rings, and it's like, get up here right now, bring the tapes, and bring ID.
But what? Why did you do it? Is it
because
you're
young?
Because you're a kid? Like you're a journalist. Like, he has no right to those tapes. Those belong to you. You did everything. You're nothing unethical about what you were doing. You had no business demanding the tapes. Why bring the tapes at all? Why give them? What was going through your head?
Well, I felt at the time, it's weird. I did the audio version of the book and got really emotional. It came out of nowhere.
You did.
And all of a sudden I realized this wound was kind of in me. I thought he was going to have me beaten up.
Uh-huh.
He had a bodyguard that ended up coming up and signing a contract that the tapes would now belong to Greg. It was really kind of gothic in a way.
Felt threatened.
Yeah, I did get threatened. And, you know, and he woke up a couple days later and was like, why do I have these tapes in my room?
Yeah, but he knew. He just felt guilty.
He knew.
He was guilty. He did something terrible. He threatened a kid, a literal child. And stole the tapes, made you sign something fake, and took the tapes from you, which was basically a crime, and also something that was, like, I think, journalistically very interesting.
It's true. And also, his brother and another member of the band had died in the previous couple of years. He had done no interviews. The person from Rolling Stone before me did drugs with the band, didn't write about him doing the drugs, wrote about them doing drugs, and made fun of their accents and all that stuff. So I was the enemy. You know, in my own way. But what's strange is, you know, the people, we talk about biopics and stuff, like there's another area, which is like rock autobiographies that are never truthful.
Right.
Because they're kind of, it's like really serious things get turned into like tour bus anecdotes. And he did it himself, you know, in his autobiography. And he claimed that he played a little prank and, you know, gave me the tapes back immediately and stuff. It's like, no, it didn't go that way.
Right.
But, you know, it's like, it's living life at a young age and it's trying to find your voice in the world, which is kind of what the point of the book was. I wanted to write about that time when you imprint so heavily, music, people, experiences. And that becomes you finding where you're going to sit in the world and how you're going to go forward. And what's your voice going to be? And, that's kind of why I didn't say me, me, me in the book. I kind of wanted to take the ride, let you take the ride with me. And it kind of ends at a point with a scene about my dad that I'm really proud of, which is when my dad realizes I'm not going to become a lawyer like his grandfather.
The youngest, you want to be the youngest lawyer.
Yeah, I mean, this was the path that was set out for me. But we talked about the Allman Brothers. My dad had stayed up all night on New Year's Eve to tape an Allman Brothers concert for me. And I came home from going to a party. And that was his kind of gift to me to say, I understand that you're going to take the path that you're going to take. And he also had tried to run answering services, you know, which were then being replaced by automatic answering machines. So what he always said is like, you know, nothing will ever beat the sound of the human voice, which he really believed. And that's the end of the book. Because in this love story to music, I wanted to end by saying the human voice, which my dad kind of used as a motto, is always true. And when you hear that voice in a song, even like in a way that the song speaks to you in such a personal way, that's the stuff you never forget. That tattoos your life.
So there's a moment in the book where you were with Don Henley, and you know, you hear these songs and they are to me just sort of from growing up, the kind of background rock, classic rock songs. And then you read about the effort and time and precision and focus and dedication to writing, just writing over and over and over and over again. And maybe this is a strange place to take it, but what I thought when I saw that is, I bet you hate the internet. the way it kind of cheapens and kind of, we're surrounded by so much writing with so much less care. And I wonder if you feel that.
I don't hate the internet, but I really know what you're talking about, which is like fact checkers don't exist anymore. People can just like spew stuff out. And the thoughtful stuff always lands best. But song-wise, I love that you brought up Don Henley. The other person that you have to love for knowing how conversation, Tom Petty. Tom Petty would spend so much time on these songs so that they would sound simple and easy, like a conversation with a friend. And that's the stuff that I love most of all. It's like familiar and soulful, but not just thrown out, really worked on enough to make it sound simple, but it's not.
So you move, in part because of Tom Petty, into filmmaking. And now we're in this moment where you have to be nostalgic just for going to the theater. There's this big question now, Netflix potentially going to buy Time Warner. Ted Sarandos said something recently about the movie theater, in many ways calling it an outdated concept. Like, do you worry about that, the end of the movie theaters, and like what it means for people to not have that experience?
I do. A good movie can break through on any format, I think. But yeah, I mean, going and sitting in a theater and having the experience of a big movie star being somebody you can relate to and can tell a story that kind of moves you in some way, that's the Tom Cruise version of movie making. Like, he's never going to go on a smaller screen because he likes telling those big stories. So I just think there's a place for all of it, but I never want to lose the big story. And PTA's movie is definitely a big story.
Yeah.
And you get so exhilarated that you just want to go back to the theater. So I just want them to stick around.
Now, before we go, I did want to grill you about something, which is...
I hope it's what I think
it's the 2011 Matt Damon dramedy, We Bought a Zoo.
Good. Let's talk about it, John.
Because...
I'm ready to face this one.
You recently said in an interview, yeah, the title doesn't really describe what the movie's about. It seems like you lied to that man's face. Because it certainly is about this. This movie is in a pantheon of movies that are considered to be better than their titles.
I'm honored to be...
movies that include The Shawshank Redemption, 2014's The Edge of Tomorrow... and then there are movies that were just bad and had bad titles, like 2010's Legends of the Guardians, The Owls of Gahool. Too much title. All right. So We Bought a Zoo. What happened with that title?
It was the name of Benjamin Mee's book.
Yeah.
So nobody ever really stopped to say, should we really call this movie We Bought a Zoo?
Nobody? There's no, there was, oh, I would have.
No, I, well, we needed you there, brother. I wasn't there. We needed you there. I just think, I love the movie. Yeah. I love the movie. I think, I just
it's a very
really,
sweet movie. People love the movie. It did really well, too.
It did well. Elle Fanning is great in it, and she's just kind of starting out. Matt's incredible. Scarlett Johansson. I just think We Bought a Zoo said, don't see this movie right now.
Why is that? Why? It's interesting, though, actually, because it's not on its face obvious. You could totally, I understand how nobody would occur to them that it would gain this sort of like silliness to it, but it is now. What is it? What
well,
do you think
the first, the first, the first adverti- the first posters that they came up with just were pictures of animals, which really was going to be a problem. I think Matt Damon saw one of those posters and said, I really didn't have to be in this movie, did I? But a stork is on the poster. I think it was felt to be heartwarming and wasn't. The movie is. It's just funny. Making a movie is a zillion decisions, and one key one can go wrong and tip the whole ship over. So you just have to kind of be loose and think about these things and try and make the right decision at the right moment. But sometimes one little piece is off, and we're talking about it now, 14 years later.
So it's time for a segment we call Zoo Fast, Zoo Furious. And I'm going to give you new title
there we
options.
Go. I like that.
You will rate them on a scale from 1 to 5 zoos. At the end, you must pick the official new title for We Bought a Zoo by declaring out loud, I'm buying that zoo. All right, first title. Wait, where the fuck did this zoo come from?
I like it. I'm not going to buy that zoo, but I'm going to appreciate that.
Next up, we have Stuck on Zoo.
That's an 8 at least.
Yeah. I know what zoo did last summer. This has to happen in the summer. Now, this
based
is
on a true story. Keep in mind. Yeah.
Based on a true story. Next up, we have Wildlife. This we thought was a real... Now, here's our thinking. You couldn't call it Wildlife because you'd already made a movie called The Wildlife.
Yes, written, so you were written by me. I was.
So you couldn't do
it. I was cornered. I can't buy that zoo.
You can't... But Wildlife would have been a good name for the movie.
It really would have been.
Damn. What a shame.
But we can do better.
I'm not sure.
I feel it's coming.
All right, let's see. Next up... Oh, he's just not that into zoo.
That's good.
10 things I hate about zoo. In Captivity. That was like a real pitch. In Captivity. Next up, we got Keeper. Like zookeeper.
Keeper.
Keeper.
Just Keeper.
Keeper. Like the zoo's a keeper.
Ooh,
he's a keeper.
The one word, Keeper.
Keeper.
Always good. Maybe you know, in France, it's called Nouveau Départ, which what is that? That's a new direction.
That's very French to give it a kind of generic, kind of serious title.
That's right.
And then the last one was That Thing You Zoo. So which zoo are you going to buy, you think?
What's Keeper.
Keeper.
I'm going to buy Keeper.
Okay. Okay. Well,
Keeper.
Cameron Crowe, thank you so much for talking to me. This is so the book is The Uncool. I really do. Really is a great read.
Thanks. Thanks, you guys.
And when we come back, Tig Notaro.
Here's to Zoo.
Hey, don't go anywhere. There's more of Love It or Leave It coming up.
Love It or Leave It, brought to you by OneSkin. What does your skincare routine look like? I've got a good routine these days. You know, I'd use a cleanser, and then I use some kind of a serum, like an OS1 peptide thing, and then I use a moisturizer and an eye cream. You know, I'm getting up there. Got to do something for the eyes. Everybody should have a great skincare routine, and you should make OneSkin part of it. At the core is their patented OS1 peptide, the first ingredient proven to target senescent cells, the root cause of wrinkles, creepiness, and a loss of elasticity, all signs of aging. And these results have now been validated in 5 different clinical studies, certified safe for sensitive skin. OneSkin products are free from over 1,500 harsh and irritating ingredients. They're dermatologist tested and have been awarded the National Eczema Association Seal of Acceptance. That's right, Tommy. They won the itchy. the annual itchies. Yeah. It's a fun event. It's a fun event. And all of OneSkin's products are designed to layer seamlessly and replace multiple steps in your routine.
OneSkin also just launched the limited edition holiday sets, including a nightly rewind gift set, which is one of those rare gifts that's impressive and genuinely useful, providing an upgrade to anyone's nightly routine, featuring their best-selling face moisturizer, their new peptide lip mask. I use that. I think it's great. And a cooling Gua Sha. That's a tool. Tommy, do you know what a Gua Sha is?
No, what is it?
It's this thing you put on your face. You kind of like rub it along your face to kind of squeeze out the juices. And the idea is it makes your face look thinner, but it's sort of a soothing thing. It's not bad.
It's like a roller?
No, it's kind of like a roller. It's more just of a piece of jade usually and just kind of go along your face a few different times in a pattern. Sort of like a jade egg, yeah, just for the face. For the face.
Giddy up.
It's all designed to work together as your body enters its natural nightly repair mode. That's the nightly rewind gift set. Helping renew skin at the cellular level for stronger, smoother, and more resilient skin. For a limited time, try OneSkin for 15% off using code LOVEIT at oneskin.co/loveit. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
And we're back! Here to discuss every single thing that's happened since the last year, it's the timeless Tig Notaro.
Hello again.
Hi. Good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Why, thank you, Cameron Crowe.
Cameron Crowe's here.
I know. I saw him backstage. I love Cameron Crowe.
I bet you really like singles.
I love Tig.
Singles.
You bet I do?
Yeah.
I do. But it doesn't just end there.
Say more. Say more.
I mean, really?
If you'd like.
I mean, sure. I mean, Fast Times.
Yeah.
Come on. Almost Famous. I mean, of course, I'm alive, right? I love rock and roll. It's the first thing I said to him. I love rock and roll too, sir. But listen, I was listening to you talk about the cliches and the things that in films and that drive you crazy and that are funny. My wife has a very, very good one that I love so deeply. And I hope you have it in one of your films and I've forgotten. But when somebody from like a label is listening and then they're like on a payphone, they're like, man, you got to hear them.
That's good.
It's yeah, so good. Good. It's good. So good.
It's good.
So good.
We watched La Bamba the other night, and I enjoy that film. Have you seen that film? Okay. I thought for sure, I was telling our kids, I was like, I think there's one of those moments that mommy talks about, and there wasn't. Anyway, how are you?
I like La Bamba. You should make yours like La Bamba.
Yeah, yeah.
Tig, yeah. You do not keep up with pop culture, famously.
No, but what I do keep up with is music and documentaries.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are my two huge passions, and then I fall very short.
Is there any pop culture moment that jumped out at you in 2025 that did kind of somehow cross into your kind of area of vision? Which is one way to say, did you see anything?
I mean, I saw things. Good question.
But like, is there anything that you normally, like, are you aware of what's happening? Do you know who Jen Shah is?
No.
Right.
Who is Jen Shah?
She's a real housewife that got out of prison today.
I would
today.
Never in a million years know that.
But you know that she was in jail with Elizabeth Holmes from Theranos.
I did not know that, but I'm familiar with Elizabeth Holmes And I've seen that documentary. That's my strength.
I had this
picture. But the Shaw lady is not.
I had this picture of kind of like you opening up a newspaper, but before you did, like Stephanie cuts out the pop culture so you don't see it, you know? Like that Jefferson Bible where it doesn't say God anywhere.
Well, do you know I used to have a talk show called Under a Rock with Tig Notaro?
Yes, and they'd bring out people that were supremely famous. Yeah. And they would be strangers to you.
But what they would do, my producers would show me like pages of headshots, and they'd be like, tell us who you know on here. And then I'd be like, I don't know that. And they'd be like, wait, you don't know this person? I'd be like, no. And then they'd get different angles of that person. They'd be like, oh my God, she doesn't know who this person is. And then they'd go out to their agents and be like, does your client want to come on this show and let Tig interview them to try and figure out who they are?
It's awesome. Everyone should go watch it. It's awesome.
And it might be coming back, but anyway.
That's exciting. Yeah.
Well, I spoke too soon.
It's funny because I was thinking about you, which is like you have Handsome, which is your podcast. Mm-hmm. You're in Star Trek Academy.
The crowd goes mild, huh?
The people that know it love
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're in Star Trek Academy.
Starfleet Academy.
Yep. Sorry, Starfleet Academy.
It airs on January 15th, starring Holly Hunter. Paul Giamatti, you know, those people.
Oh, we're getting them all in the uniforms? Yeah. Hell
and
yeah.
And I know who they are.
Paul Giamatti's in Singles.
Yes.
Paul Giamatti's in one scene in Singles where he just sort of goes to town on some girl's face.
He has one line. What?
But he crushes
Paul
it.
Paul Giamatti.
But he crushes it.
He has one it. Word.
That's right. One
yeah.
word.
Yeah. Let's not overdo
That's his
it.
Text. Yeah. His text is one word. But and what he brings to
but
he's,
the text. Yeah, he sits in it. He
yeah,
sits
he
in
really
it.
He sits in it.
Whole word becomes a whole universe. You also have the documentary, Come See Me in the Good Light.
Yes, yes. If you haven't seen it, I highly recommend that you see it.
It's
is
on
so
Apple.
Beautiful.
It's beautiful.
It's so beautiful.
You teased a project. You're working on a movie with Zack Snyder that will contain, and I'm quoting here, hot lesbian action.
Well, yes. Can I just answer yes?
Yes.
I did a movie with Zach, and I was, I replaced somebody that was a sexual, he did some sexual, he got in trouble.
Got in trouble, yeah.
And he got erased from the movie, and then Zach called me to come shoot an entire action film on a green screen. You don't know this part?
No.
Do you not follow pop culture?
I'll be honest. What I'm realizing now is sometimes you really got to click on the links, Cameron Crowe. There's stuff beneath the links that's of interest.
Yeah. I did a whole action film on a green screen, zombie film. I was flying the helicopter, getaway helicopter. And I kept joking with Zach because it was a huge international cast and all the people were really beautiful from all around the world. And I was like, I'll probably just be like a lesbian wandering in the background, you know, which I was fine with. I'm not above that. And so I kept saying to Zach, I was like, oh my gosh, in my mind, because I'm the only one filming with you, I am the star of this movie. And I was like, but I bet when it comes out, I'll just be, you know, this scrappy little lesbian wandering around. And then I accidentally went viral for being sexy in that movie.
What?
Hear me out. So even out of all of these hot people from other countries and what have you, people were talking about me, okay?
Yeah.
And then I got on a Zoom. I said, I got a pitch for you, sir. And he was like, what? And I go, if people thought I was hot in that movie, why don't we just make a whole action film full of lesbians. I was like, straight men are going to see that. Gay women are going to want, everybody's going to want to see hot lesbians. And I said, the poster will say hot lesbian action. And he was like, holy shit, let's do it.
Wow. That's so cool.
Oh, is this show supposed to have like big laughs and then long silences? I just want to make
By
sure.
By design.
I just want to make sure the vibe's right.
What's the? Have you heard? What is it, the Japanese art of ma? Does anyone know what I'm talking about? No, you don't know what I'm saying. Anybody know any Miyazaki fans out there?
Mm.
Where it's, what's that period of quiet called? This is it. We're in it.
Do you know what I really appreciated when you said that? Does anyone know what that is? I saw a few people in the audience go. Yes, yes, I do, John. Yeah. It's funny you should ask. I do.
And you and Cameron also share something in common, which is you also started out in music.
Yes.
Would you let Cameron interview and then demand the tapes back?
Sure.
Okay.
John, you love our dynamic, don't you?
I love it so much.
I cherish it. I love it.
We have a great time.
I know it.
I cherish it from my front row seat. I just want you to know.
And you're part of it, though.
I am part of it.
Hey, you know what I was thinking about, Cameron Crowe? And I'm sorry to keep saying your name.
Tell me, John. Tell me.
Is it Cameron Marie Crowe? Is that right?
Remember when you wrote that autobiographical piece about your exploits with girls and your kind of pathetic kind of grasping at sexuality in a way that was humiliating to you, and then you wrote it all up and you sent it to Rolling Stone and then they printed it?
Yeah.
That was the longest sentence, by the way.
Did you really think they weren't going to print it? Did you really think it wasn't good when you sent it, or did on some level you know you'd written something great?
On no level did I think I'd...
You really thought you were just fulfilling your deadline and they weren't going to run it?
No, they were like, we're going to let you write about something that's not music. You're going to stretch a little bit. You're going to write about... And I'm already in. I'm like, yeah, sounds great. How you learned about sex. I'm like, you got it. Got it, man.
And how old were you?
17.
God damn
and
it.
And then it's like you have to write it after you hang up, like being super cool about taking the assignment. And it was terrible. It was terrible. And I just felt nothing but embarrassment and humiliation about like the terrible time that I was still trying to learn about sex. And
had you had sex? Or maybe that's too personal.
I don't think so.
I had. But it was a twisted journey to that yes, for sure. And I sent it in, and I just, you know, I went through all the excuses in my head. You know, I'm too sick to write it. It got lost in the mail. I just wrote something that was kind of like, you know, like just throwing it out onto the page, and I sent it in. And the guy was laughing when I picked up the phone. Now this is writing. This is writing. The more embarrassing, the better. Don't you see? And, I don't know. I kind of learned that lesson. That's like embarrassing is cathartic and ultimately funny.
Yeah.
Don't you find that to be true?
Oh, my God.
Do it every week.
Yeah. It's how I keep the lights on.
Well, the reason I wanted to bring that up is only because I was thinking about what it would feel like. Like, that must have felt embarrassing at the time. I don't know if it still does, but I imagine it certainly are you able to look back on that person with kind of generosity as, whether it's you or not you, as not someone you share in the embarrassment of?
I enjoy the embarrassment of it from a distance, for sure. What still makes me queasy is the caricature that they came up with that went along with the article, which was me nude, kind of trotting with a little shadow across this section. And it was like, oh, look at the funny embarrassed boy.
You still
feel
that.
He wrote this story. Yeah, it's embarrassing, the caricature. But
we have the picture. Yeah.
Okay, good. Let's let's have a look at it. No, the embarrassing stuff. Well, it was also true of Fast Times. Like when we first started watching, you know, when they screened Fast Times for audiences, it was the most embarrassing stuff was what people loved and brought the house down. Like Judge Reinhold getting caught, you know, in the bathroom. In pleasuring himself, embarrassingly caught doing it, was like the greatest thing these audiences had ever seen. And it was like, oh, wow, well, it's kind of, humiliation is funny.
Tig, do you find that though, like that telling the, like using the things that embarrass you on stage, take, does it, like, for, especially from like earlier in your life, does it like remove it with, does it get rid of its power?
Well, yeah. I mean, I used the world as my toilet growing up. I wet my pants. Like, I just, nothing could stop me. Like, just out in the world or going to bed at night. Like, I was just wetting up a storm. And and I never would have imagined that I would be completely fine talking about any of that kind of stuff or... yeah, all of that, I think. Not that that was my biggest laugh I've ever gotten tonight. Now I feel shame.
No, that was a Japanese moment of quiet. Mm.
The Miyazaki moment.
It's a Miyazaki moment. Mm-hmm. It's a Miyazaki moment.
But yeah, it's, I find it, I don't know. I've been doing stand-up almost 30 years, and I think that you reach a certain point where it's like, kind of anything goes until you like get married and have a family, and then not everything goes because then there's other people involved in it. But for the most part, yeah, I would say so.
Yeah. I was thinking about like, there's the getting older, and like one of the nice things about getting older is being able to see your younger self with more generosity, yeah. Which is like, I think one of the nice things about your body slowly decaying right in front of you. And
well, that starts happening at 25. Your body, you start to die.
Yeah.
Should we go to commercial or?
Let's just go to the next segment. We'll be right back.
Hey, don't go anywhere. There's more of Love It or Leave It coming up.
Love It or Leave It is brought to you by Hiya. Typical children's vitamins are basically candy in disguise, filled with 2 teaspoons of sugar, unhealthy chemicals, and other gummy additives growing kids shouldn't eat. That's why Hiya created a superpower chewable vitamin. Hiya fills in the most common gaps in modern children's diets to provide the full body nourishment our kids need with a yummy taste they love. Formulated with the help of pediatricians and nutritional experts, Hiya, I don't think they should be putting nutritionists and nutritional experts in these vitamins. I didn't know that. Ugh. Hiya is pressed with a blend of 12 organic fruits and veggies, then supercharged with 15 essential vitamins and minerals. Oh, they help make it. They're not in it.
God, that makes a lot more sense.
It's non-GMO, vegan, dairy-free, allergy-free, gelatin-free, and nut-free. Though you can have nuts on the side if you want to dip. Every single batch is third-party tested, so you know the product is safe and nutritious. Hiya is designed for kids 2 and up, sent straight to your door, so parents have one less thing to worry about. Tommy, you have personal experience with Hiya, because I don't have children.
Listen, these vitamins are delicious. Kids love them, as we've discussed several times. I used to be able to beat Charlie Favreau in chess. Then he started taking Hiya vitamins. Now he smokes me.
Mm-hmm.
He always knows my opening move. He beats me in 4 to 6 moves.
Wow, that's quick.
It's remarkable. I saw him in Central Park the other day playing against some old-timers. Mm-hmm. But they're great. And also, you know, if you're sick of battling with your kids to eat the greens, Hiya also has Kids Daily Greens and Superfoods, which is a chocolate-flavored greens powder designed specifically for kids, packed with 55 whole food ingredients to support brain power, development, and digestion. You get a scoop, shake, and sip with milk or any other non-dairy beverage for a delicious and nutritious boost your kids will actually enjoy.
We've worked out a special deal with Hiya for their best-selling children's vitamin. Receive 50% off your first order. To claim this deal, you must go to hiyahealth.com/loveit. This deal is not available on their regular website, so go to hiyahealth.com/LOVETT and get your kids the full body nourishment they need to grow into healthy adults.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
And we're back.
And we're back. Some news before our final segment. Pod Save America is going down under. We are heading to Australia and Auckland, New Zealand for the Pod Save America, hopefully just visiting tour of 2026. We will be in Auckland on February 11th. And then three cities in Australia after that, Melbourne on February 13th, Brisbane on February 14th, and Sydney on February 16th. With everything going on in America these days, we will feel the pull of the Commonwealth countries and decide whether or not to stay for good. You'll have to join us to find out. Tickets are on sale right now. For more information, go to crooked.com/events. Woo! Woo! You've gone to Australia and done stand-up.
Oh, yeah.
Any tips?
No.
Also, the newest book from Crooked Media Reads is called Hated by All the Right People, Tucker Carlson and the Unraveling of the Conservative Mind. It is out on January 27th by one of our favorite political journalists, New York Times Magazine writer Jason Zangerli. It's an incredible book. Tucker Carlson, his evolution from like a semi-serious person to the kind of right-wing authoritarian MAGA guy or kind of MAGA adjacent guy he's become, like tells the story of what happened in right-wing politics. And it's an incredible account. So everybody, do me a favor, pick up the book at crooked.com/books. You pre-order a copy, you'll get 15% off with the code Jason15. crooked.com/books. Okay. We're at the time of the year where people announce how much they've grown and changed and learned. We also are at the time of year where people make promises for how they'll change next year, often the same promise they made from the previous year, which is why it's time for a segment we're calling I Know What You Didn't Do Last Winter. So here's how it works. We're going to spin the wheel, and wherever it lands, you have to share one New Year's resolution and also one thing that maybe people would say you should change, but you're not changing it. You're not changing it. Let's spin it.
Oh, I like that.
It has landed on Cameron. Cameron, what is one thing you'll change and one thing you refuse to change in 2026?
One thing I refuse to change is my desire to keep everything. I'm a pack rat.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. And that's, you know, that kind of clings to you. You have to deal with that.
Did you keep a lot of notes, contemporaneous notes? You have notes. This book feels reported.
It is, because I kept everything. So
and you're going to keep doing that.
I guess I can't stop doing it.
Remember we want those, you to stop.
I actually am fine with it. I think it's correct. Because here's the thing. That's going to be such a great estate sale. And no, think about it. Keep it all. Don't get rid of it. Keep it all good. In one place. Yeah. Because then it gets cataloged. And then we get to really see it all. After, because you can't take it with you. You're not going to be buried in some giant sarcophagus with all of your objects. One would hope.
I didn't know you were dying. I really enjoyed talking with you, meeting you. I have enjoyed doing this show, and this is hard to take.
Speak nicely of this evening at the estate sale. Just remember these moments with the people, you know, pouring through trash.
Yeah.
What's something, Cameron, that you will change?
I've been writing for a couple of years solid, and it's time to direct again. So it's time to do that. I've been missing it, and it's time to do it. And it'll be the Joni Mitchell movie.
I have a directing question for you. Did you go to school for directing?
I did not.
Okay. I need to know. Nobody seems to have this answer. Why, when people are talking about shots, they do this?
That really bugs me, Tig.
Why do they do that?
Yes, it's like we're gonna come in through here, and you're like, with your fingers?
Yeah.
What are you gonna do? You have like tongs? You're gonna bring tongs?
Every
in?
Set.
Yeah, that's right.
And then we're gonna come
hey,
in.
You're right. Do you ever like go like this?
Of course he does.
Do you do that?
Only for funny pictures that. People, you know,
but it's never
at.
Useful on set to be like, what's this movie gonna look like? What's it gonna look like in my fingers?
Yeah, I never quite understood that one, but some people really love it.
Yeah,
some people
that's
okay,
right.
Let's spin it again.
Ooh.
I had a feeling.
Yeah. Tick, it's your time.
What's one thing you refuse to change? One thing you're going to change?
I'm not going to stop working out.
Oh, great.
I started working out.
Oh, really?
And I'm very, like, I'm not, like, pumping iron or anything, but it feels so good. I'm sorry. I'm 54. This is a new thing where doctors are like, you gotta start doing this and bone density and whatever. And I was like, I'm not gonna. And now I am. And I love it. I love it.
That's great.
Doing it two or three times a week. Huh. No difference in the look. No difference in the look of my body, well, but I feel good.
I do think that's maybe like the kind of unspoken curse of the perennial, naturally skinny person, which is they're like, I never worked out. And then then all of a sudden a doctor's like, oh, it looks fine, but inside there's nothing left. It's just...
My health record has already proven that inside it was troublesome.
Yeah, for sure. There have been red flags.
Yeah. But I'm stapled together, but...
So what are you doing to work out? You're doing like... what are you doing? You're doing some squats over there?
Yeah, I've squatted a few times.
That's cool.
I've picked up some heavy things.
Oh, yeah. You got to pick up heavy things.
Yeah.
You got to turn potential energy into kinetic energy.
That's right.
That's how you burn calories.
And I'm not going to stop.
Don't stop.
Yeah.
Nobody stop. Nobody stop Tig. Oh, that's a funny name for something. What's something you are going to change?
I've already started changing. I'm saying no more often than I ever have.
That's a good one.
And the other side of it, I want people to tell me no. I love direct conversation where people are like, I don't have time for that, or I'm not going to be able to call you, or I'll never do that. Lose my number, kid. I'm like, all right. I want the same.
And a quick no, right? Like
I want a quick no.
Ruminating on it and then giving you the no. Not a good no.
If it's a real ruminating, I'm all in.
Okay.
I just want a real interaction.
Yeah.
I can live through a no. You know what I'm saying, Cameron? Yeah.
I love it.
I love you too. You know what? I actually also started, and I'll stick this in. I heard you talking about emails. They drive me nuts. And so I told my reps, my assistant, don't email me until Thursday mornings every week unless it is really important. And then I'll deal with, I feel like Thursday and Friday, that's enough time for turnaround for things that aren't pressing. So I'm just like relatively radio silent until Thursday and Friday. So wow. That's a new thing.
So do you dread the Thursday, or are you like energized
Let's be honest.
Thursday?
I'm only 2 weeks in.
Okay.
But I just started to feel like, oh my God, all the back and forth and the like, geez, just Thursday morning. If it's not pressing, Thursday morning, we'll get to it. And I don't feel anything other than like, I wonder what wasn't pressing that I have to deal with, you know? Rather than all day, every day, back and forth, this and that, blah, blah, blah.
You're making good choices. I can feel it. Yeah. I can feel it.
I want
the lighter email, the no. This is good. It's going to be a good year for you.
Yeah.
It's going to be a good year for you. Let's spin it one more time.
I feel like I know where this is going to land.
Oh, it's landed on me. All right. Here's something that I'm not going to change.
Oh.
I'm going to use my phone in bed before bed. I'm just going to use my phone in bed before bed. I'm going to be on my phone till it's time for my eyes to literally close. The best you can hope for, and I consider this a compromise, is I will declare, you know what? I got to clear my mind and put my phone down so I can focus on one screen as a treat for maybe 15 minutes before we're lights out. And I mean, I want to have the TV going off and asleep. Like, I'm watching a show, credits roll, TV off, out. That's how, I want
and
screen.
And how does Ari deal with that? Or we don't even care about that.
They're on the same page.
Okay.
They're on the same page. Well, we will turn that show off. I will go to sleep, and then they will be on their phone for like another hour.
Trying to call you. Trying to wake you up.
Because they're like a night owl.
Yeah.
They're a night owl, but I can just fall asleep.
Yeah. Wow.
I can just fall asleep. Now, I'll wake up too soon because the Cameron Crowe, the thoughts begin. Oh, the thoughts, they come.
Are you the first to wake up?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm up.
Got it.
My eyes open. I'm awake.
He's up.
He's up.
Up.
I go. Are you able to fall back to sleep once you've woken up?
Oh, it depends. I mean, I struggle. I showed up. I said, I love rock and roll, and I have trouble sleeping, Cameron. I already went into all this backstage. But yeah, I have to do my breathing exercises. I have to, do all of those kind of things. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Oh. I'm here on no sleep, by the way.
Yeah. But you know what? They wouldn't have known that. And that's what I said that to you backstage. There's only one way you are on stage. You know what I mean?
No.
Fucking awesome.
Oh, right. Right.
Yeah, but
it's like, Tig Notaro. Awesome. You know, you have
I'm a machine.
You know, you're like Michael Jackson when he played with Michael
I'm
Jordan.
I'm just like Michael Jackson.
Jordan, the flu game. I was trying to say Michael Jordan, the flu game. That's what I was trying to say. But in many ways, you also do separately, and we've talked about this, remind me a lot of Michael Jackson. Now, here's something. And
there it is.
Here's something I will change. Something I will change. Well, I will tell you something. Here's something I'm in the process of changing, which is, it did take me, Cameron Crowe, until over the age of 40 to be officially diagnosed with what is evident by the cards and people that listen to the show as an extremely terminal case of ADHD. Like, truly one of the worst. Like, we've never seen one like this. We didn't know it could get this bad. Like, they bring in the residents to kind of look at the chart and be like, have you ever seen anything like this? We've never seen a brain make connections this poorly before. We've never seen someone.
See, I was picturing your skeleton on there, yeah. Too. Yeah.
Yeah, my bones. Yeah. They're like, those bones have ADHD. Yeah. We didn't know that was possible.
Well, the doctor had ADHD too and was like, I was looking at the bones. That's why you guys are a good match.
And then
medically.
We're like, we have an idea about bones. All that's a way of saying is I now take something called Adderall. And I don't know if you've heard of this stuff. Boy, they just give it to you at the pharmacy. That's insane because every day from about 9 to 3:30 p.m., I'm a superior being. I'm like Cameron's friend, what's his name? Movie star. Tom Cruise. when he's in Minority Report moving the screens around, that's me doing my emails from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m.
Damn.
That's what happens. I'm like, I can see the future. I know about pre-crime. I'm moving things around. And then I'll crash and burn.
Yeah.
Then I'll crash and burn. Worth it. Worth it. Worth it.
What's the crash like?
Oh, you're in it. This is it.
Wait, maybe I have ADHD. Did you say what you're not going to stop doing?
No, I'm going to keep doing Adderall. I'm going to keep using my phone in bed.
Oh, right.
And the
right.
change is I'm going to keep treating this ADHD thing I found out that I had, obviously, because that's a new thing for me too. Because I respond to my emails every sort of 3 or 4 years. Uh-huh. That's been my thing. I say, hey, don't email me unless the number is in the Fibonacci sequence. So it has to be Fibonacci. Mm. So sometimes it's 2 years in a row, but sometimes it's a huge gap.
Yeah. It's like, oh boy, John wandered off. Thought they'd get a laugh. It's weird when they don't, you know?
Yeah.
It's like what I do, you know?
I felt it. I just want you to know.
The pain or
the complete
potential?
Gamut of uh-huh. all of it, the yeah. potential, the realization.
I like the visual of people waiting on him to write back and then realizing he's wandering off, and I picture him heading off into the woods, and I don't know.
It's good.
I liked it.
It's good.
Anyway.
And that's our show. Thank you so much.
On that note.
It's great. Thank you so much to Cameron Crowe, Tig Notaro. What a blast.
Thank you.
We will see you next year at Dynasty Typewriter. There are 325 days until the midterms. Have a great night and have a great New Year's. If you're already scrolling endlessly, which we know you are, don't forget to follow us at Crooked Media on Instagram, TikTok, and all the other ones for original content, community events, and more. You can also find Love It or Leave It on YouTube for videos of your favorite segments and other YouTube-exclusive content. And if you want to type our praises or rip us a new one, consider dropping us a review. Finally, you can join Crooked's Friends of the Pod subscription community for ad-free Love It or Leave It and Pod Save America episodes, subscriber-exclusive pods, and more. Sign up at crooked.com/friends.
Love It or Leave It is a Crooked Media production. It is written and produced by me, John Lovett, and Lee Eisenberg. Kendra James is our executive producer. Bill McGrath is our producer. And Kennedy Hill is our associate producer. Hallie Kiefer is our head writer. Sarah Lazarus, Jocelyn Kaufman, Peter Miller, Alan Pierre, and Subha Agarwal are our writers. Jordan Cantor is our editor. Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis provide audio support. Stephen Colon is our audio engineer. Our theme song is written and performed by Shersher. Thanks to our designer, Sammy Caderna-Rees, for creating and running all of our visuals, which you can't see because this is a podcast. And thanks to our digital producers, David Tolles, Claudia Shang, Mia Kelman, Delon Villanueva, and Rachel Gajewski for filming and editing video each week. Our head of production is Matt DeGroat, and our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East. It's love it or leave it.